Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
This would have been the Chicago Marathon day today. Oh, but that pesky coronavirus came along and spoiled my favorite show of the year.
Like I said, I think you're missing not being able to complain.
It's not me. It's not for me that I hurt today, that I'm in pain. That I'm suffering today. It's for you, the listeners, the people who, for weeks ahead of the marathon, email me to let me know they're looking forward to the marathon show and my nonstop complaining for 4 hours.
You get that around Easter, not just weeks ahead.
Yeah, but you got to admit.
You start getting that around Easter.
I notch it up on marathon day. You got to admit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you begin, just like they do, preparing for next year's marathon the day after the marathon is over.
That's very true. That's true. I start my warm-ups. I go on a all-carb diet for days before, so I have plenty of complaining energy to last me for the full 4 hours of the show. Sometimes I cramp up. I admit it. Sometimes I have to stop. Sometimes, you know, Schwani brings a banana into the room and some Gatorade to help me sustain.
Do you go into training eating all carbs as you we get up to the date?
Oh, a week ahead of time.
Yeah.
Before the marathon show.
And you were not able to use your secret route to work today it wasn't necessary.
But I did use it anyway.
Oh, you okay. All right.
Good call.
In tribute to what would have been.
Easily went like 20 miles out of my way for no particular reason. Just in honor of that. And I will be virtually complaining all morning long.
Virtually complaining?
Yeah.
You either complain or you don't.
Remember the good old days when we would be on Michigan Avenue in that old dump building that we used to be in that's now a mattress store? We'd be right on the street. We'd be able to see the runners when, you know, they finished wrapped up in their aluminum foil blankets and, you know, with their medals on. And They'd come by the window and give me a big thumbs up, and I would finger gesture back at them.
Yes, you would.
Again.
Yes, you would.
Thumbs up.
Hand signals.
I mean, giving them thumbs up also, like, you know, way to go. Way to go. But then also, a couple of years, we went outside and gave them donuts.
Mm-hmm.
We figured, you know, you've been way too healthy. You know, because really, if I've said it once, I've said it a million times. If you look at those runners, they look like they need a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't look healthy to me. So we would go outside and try to fatten them up a little bit.
Yep. I remember that.
Those were the days.
And we still, it's in the talking stages, has been for about 8 years now of the stroll that we were going to do the cakewalk. The cakewalk.
Yeah, cakewalk. That was one of our first special events here on the Sunday morning show.
Yeah.
That we talked about and never did in a long list of special
things that we haven't done yet.
That we said that we wanted to do. I am understanding that the programming department is working on each and every one of my requests. They're just running a little bit behind.
The memo, the reply saying, we'll get back to you.
Yeah, they're
we'll get back to you.
Still on the legal pad. I know that. But
we've taken it under advisement.
But the cakewalk, I think, was our best idea. And that was to have an event where you showed up and you did not run. You walked as slowly and as lazily as you possibly could from station to station which would be about every 20 yards or so. We really didn't want to make this more than a block or two.
We didn't want to make this strenuous.
Yeah, we didn't want any exertion to go. And you would go from, you know, you'd start at the starting line, maybe drinking some chocolate milk. And then you go to the first station where we'd have donuts. And then you go to the second station where we'd have fried chicken. And then the next station after that, turkey with gravy. Just, you know, so you can get ready.
And mashed potatoes to go along with the turkey.
To go with your nap that you'd finished. When you got to the final mark, where we would have Portillo's chocolate cake for everyone. But that never happened.
Well, never say never.
Well, I'm feeling very empty today. I'm feeling very empty and shallow that there's no marathon.
Nothing that you can complain about.
Oh, there's plenty.
Well, you'll find something to complain about.
I got plenty to complain about. But
I should know this by now.
Yeah, how long have you known me?
I should know this
by
now.
Like I would ever be out of anything to complain about. But, we all look forward to the big marathon show every year. And, you know, this year is just... just different this year. We have to buck up.
I was wondering how you would approach
this.
It's
our duty as Americans to buck up.
I was just wondering how you were going to approach this today with no marathon. So, you know, I'm not terribly surprised at your reaction.
I'm just sad, that's all. I'm sad, but I'm resolute.
Well, is this the
first... we're going to make it through today.
This is the first time since
we are
the 70s?
Americans. We are Americans. We're strong.
We are resilient.
We are strong people, and we can get through the day without the ridiculous and unnecessary delays that the Chicago Marathon affords us every year in Chicago.
We are resilient.
Now, some people are going to you're going to see people running today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a virtual contest. Yeah.
Well, I mean, some people are going to do it virtually. Some people are going to do little short pieces of it. But, I mean, Andy, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but what the Chicago Marathon people are suggesting they do is first you sign up
right
with them, and then you go do your 26.2, whatever it is, miles.
26.2.
Yeah, you go do that on your own.
Yeah, there are a lot of folks.
Privately, safely, you just do it on your own.
There are folks running up the Lakeshore Trail this morning as I was coming in. So there's people out there. It's a nice day, so they're ready to go.
Yeah, it's a beautiful morning for a run. I would say, you know, for the runners who are listening to us on their little portable audio devices, if it's possible for you to delay traffic somehow while you're out there on the streets to really make it an authentic experience.
Yeah. Call the newsroom. I'll let you know when Dean is leaving.
There you go.
You can get in his way.
You cannot stop me. I have my secret way that I get here and home on Marathon Sunday. And I'm observing it today, regardless. I'm trying to live my life as normally as possible in these extraordinary times.
So you'll take the secret route home also?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Why not, right?
So, you know, if people want to do the marathon, they can. If you go to, what is it, Chicago, wait, I've got their website right
ChicagoMarathon.com.
Because I can't get enough of their website. It's ChicagoMarathon.com. And they tell you how to do your very own virtual run today if you want to.
Yep.
Somebody has texted in a little update on the event that we were talking about, our cakewalk. That we're going to do. Apparently in Springfield, they actually have something there called, well, I'm going to paraphrase. It's called the Fat Butt 5K.
Oh, nice.
That's similar. Ours will not be 5K. That's way too long for ours.
It'll be 5B. Five blocks.
Even five blocks.
Five blocks.
Yeah. 5 blocks is a lot, really, without a resting station.
And the person that wins actually comes in last.
Some cots so you can lay down and take a nap. Something like that. That's what our walk is going to be about. That's what we're looking forward to.
Oh, I see. I just hit table number two. I'm going to take a nap now.
I am
laid down,
tired. Can I get some cheese sticks over here, please? I need some cheese. What do they call that in that food in Canada? That's like cheese curds and gravy. What is that called?
I don't know offhand.
I can't remember, but it's I had it once. It was delicious, and I'm pretty sure I'd have a heart attack if I
if you ate it now.
A whole bowl. I can't think of what the name of it is. It's cheese curds, and then they put that like heavy gravy on top of it.
Oh, that's comfort food for the cold winters up
there. It is very much so. Somebody will remind me what that is in a second. All right. That said, we've got a fine, fine show today. I don't know if you've heard, we interviewed Slash from Guns N' Roses this week. Hmm. He was in town because there is a new Guns N' Roses pinball machine that is made here in the Chicago area in Elk Grove Village. And actually, there's quite a few pinball companies in Elk Grove Village, and I never knew that. But one in particular is making this new Guns N' Roses pinball machine. Slash was there to check it out, and we got invited to come and talk with Slash. So we're going to play that full interview for you coming up a little bit later on the show. Dr. Kevin Most in our next half hour. Poutine. That's what it's called.
Ah, poutine.
Poutine. We would have a poutine station on our little mini walk that we would have as well. Thank you, everybody, for reminding me about that. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, former marathoners, it's time once again for this week's far-flung forecast. A fascinating compendium of interesting facts, figures, dates, and times, all put together by the award-winning host, Dave Felix Schwann.
Felix, huh?
I was watching Odd Couple.
Oh, okay. So next week it'll be Oscar, right?
Might be Oscar. Might be Murray the Cop. I'm not sure.
It might be Murray. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Uncle Dean. And by the way, I should mention, obviously our theme music for this segment is the theme from The Andy Griffith Show, which is 60 years old this month. It premiered 60 years ago, October 3rd.
TV Land has been doing Andy Griffith Marathon in the afternoons.
Okay, yeah.
I saw the Aunt Bee Pickle episode.
Yeah.
Laughed my head off. I saw the Fun Girls. Oh. From Pixley, the Fun Girls from Mount Pilot.
From Mount Pilot. From the big city.
Hi, doll.
Hello, doll.
They're hilarious.
And then Bernie.
They call Barney Bernie. There were some classics. Barney and the Choir singing.
I didn't call him Ange. I found him at the diner.
Barney and the Choir singing Santa Lucia. Those are funny shows. I've seen them a million times. I could
and you always laugh.
Practically recite the words along with them. I know them that well, and I laugh my stupid head off every single time.
You're not alone, friend. You're not alone. But we aren't going to make
Andy, wait. One more. Andy went to visit the Darlin family.
Oh, yes.
There were some problems at the Darlin family.
Yep.
And he goes up there, and you know they're going to play a song. And the father goes
Briscoe
Darlin says, "How about if we play Don't Step on the Raccoon because the sun's coming up? Oh, Pa, don't sing that. You know it always makes me cry."
Hang on to whatever you got.
I want to. Funniest show there is. Anyway.
Virtuoso with that jug.
And now back to our far-flung forecast.
Our far-flung forecast has nothing to do with Mayberry today. We go to Hackensack, New Jersey.
Ooh.
There's a familiar name. Hackensack, New Jersey, not far from the big city of New York City. Hackensack, New Jersey actually goes back to the area settled in the late 1600s. Today, it's referred to as an inner suburb of New York City, about 12 miles from Midtown Manhattan, about 7 miles from the George Washington Bridge. But we mention Hackensack, New Jersey today because it is the birthplace of one of our astronaut heroes.
Oh.
Wally Schirra was born in Hackensack, New Jersey. Wally Schirra is the only astronaut that participated in all three of the programs that got us to the moon, Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. And it was 52 years ago today that Wally Schirra, Don Eisley, and Walter Cunningham blasted off on Apollo 7.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, we have ignition. commit liftoff. We have liftoff.
Now, this is important because this was the first time we went back into space since the fire that killed the three astronauts, right. Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee, the right. Apollo 1 fire,
right.
in 1967. So it was like a year and a half later that they picked up the program with Apollo 7 to get us to the moon by the end of 1969. And Wally Schirra was a commentator. You might call him a color man with Walter Cronkite, if you remember.
I don't remember that, but I can only imagine
and
how amazing that must have been. Because Walter Cronkite himself was a space expert, but to have somebody who has actually been in space.
Yeah. Yep, and we have some audio from that also, right after they landed on the moon. Everybody expected Walter Cronkite to come up with this profound, you know, word and prose after Neil and Buzz landed on the moon, but not quite.
Oh, boy.
Thank you. You're looking good here.
Wally, say something. I'm speechless.
I'm just trying to hold on to my breath. That is really something.
It's cool.
Very smooth touchdown.
Kind of nice to be aboard on this one, isn't it? Mm.
Wow.
Wally Schirra was a really witty person and had he was the one that came up with something because Cronkite deferred to him and said, say something. Yeah. I'm speechless.
That's cool. You know, there's a new TV series that just is debuting. I want to say it's on Netflix, The Right Stuff. Can you check that? Can you check that, Ryan, just to make sure? I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, but it's, you know, remember the movie The Right Stuff from 1983. They have taken that same concept and turned it into, it's going to be an 8-part series. The first 2 hours premiere on, was I correct? Disney Plus. That's right, Disney Plus. It's you know, based on the Mercury 7 astronauts. This one takes a little more notice of their families and their kids and the people around them. But if you're into the space, early space program, the Chwani features today, I think you might enjoy this new TV series that's out.
That is well worth checking out.
Yep.
And Hackensack, New Jersey has a nice day, mostly sunny, 62, birthplace of Wally Schirra.
Yep.
Aw, don't play that one. It makes me cry.
The Darling family. Love them. All right, quick break.
Well, we're going to have to do better than that if we're going to play for Charlene's wedding.
Oh, Paul, I can't even remember what Dud looks like.
You love him with your heart and soul, and that's all that matters. Now, let's try Slimy River Bottom, and this time make it purty.
That makes me cry.
Wish now.
That's so funny.
Pass me the sound. Feel your feet upon the ground and carry on.
939, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Time for our weekly visit with Dr. Kevin Most. Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, my friend. How are you this morning?
Dean, I am doing great. How about yourself?
It's a beautiful morning. You can't beat that. But, you know, we're still in the throes of this medical crisis here in Chicago, in the U.S., around the world. And I guess the number one thing that people are trying to understand now is the president's condition after being hospitalized last weekend after testing positive and being released from the hospital in what seemed a pretty quick turnaround. Now the president making his first appearance, public event, since being tested positive for COVID-19 yesterday. And now his medical team is saying that he is no longer a threat to anybody else. What's your take on all of that? We don't know if he's tested negative or not. We don't know if he's still positive, if he's negative. They're not saying anything, any specifics about his condition.
Yeah, you know, so it would be nice to have full transparency so that we can feel a lot more comfortable. His whole treatment was kind of bizarre, the way that he got it, how quickly he got it. And if he got these results from this Regeneron drug, you know, that's great. But, you know, he's an N of one, and we can't rely on medicine to that's only been tested on a small amount before we roll it out to the greater masses.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that, you know, people are saying. If the president beat this so quickly, you know, why not everybody else? Why doesn't everybody go on the same regime that he did?
Yeah, so if you look at the regime that he was on, obviously remdesivir has gotten a lot of press over the past few months and has been allowed to be used on many, many patients. Supplies of that are somewhat limited, but still available. The other drug that he was on, the Regeneron, the antibody drug, however, is still in a trial and has only been tried on 275 people here in the United States. So that one, I don't want to say was a shot in the dark, but, you know, he got that as well. And then he got dexamethasone, the steroid we've all been hearing about, which is extremely confusing to us in the medical profession because the study showed that it works well for individuals who need supplemental oxygen who are intubated on a ventilator. It didn't show any benefit whatsoever on individuals who did not need it and actually was detrimental in some people. So a little confusing as far as let's throw the kitchen sink at him and now try to figure out what worked.
So last night, the president's doctor said that he is no longer at risk for transmitting the coronavirus. When is a patient who has tested positive no longer at risk for transmitting the virus to someone else?
You know, it's interesting. When we look at this, and we wish we had a great answer for that, because we know that people can test positive for weeks. We know that individuals can shed virus for a long time. For him to make a bold statement like that without telling us what the results of the test are is a little concerning. I think if you see him in close proximity to anybody, those individuals should be masked completely. He should be masked. He should still, in my opinion, be treated as if he were positive. And unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah. Is it possible for someone to go from positive to negative in just a few days? I've never heard of a case like that. I don't know. That's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We don't know when he first tested positive, when he last tested negative. So in other words, he may have been positive well before his test on whatever that was that Thursday night going into Friday morning. So we're not even sure about when he actually did test start to be positive. For him to change that quickly would be very unusual. So again, we're in the infancy of this illness, but here's an individual who would be deemed to be in a vulnerable population. You know, he's 74 years old, he's male, and he's overweight. You know, he's got three strikes against him right there. So for him to turn negative that quickly either says something for the medications he was on or the timing, because I would doubt that it's his immune system.
Yeah, well, I guess his appearance yesterday was on the White House balcony. That seems like a safe scenario. But they are saying that he wants to get back out on the campaign trail this week. And you know, at his campaign rallies, people are not wearing masks for the most part, nor is he.
So two things there, Dean. One, we've shown already that what can happen when you don't wear masks. Look at the super spreader event that happened on the, on the White House property, where a large number of people were contracted the illness, as well as a lot in the West Wing. The other concern that I'm kind of surprised his doctor isn't putting his foot down more is, you know, when he said you're not out of the woods, and that is certainly true. We know that this is an illness that sometimes can get better and then can come back. So someone in his age group, I certainly wouldn't try to put him in a more stressful situation of travel, poor sleeping, you know, all the things that he's going to need to do to be out on the campaign trail.
Yeah, well, you know, we wish no ill will on anyone health-wise. But you know, take precautions for yourself. And be considerate of others. That, you know, we've already learned what happens when people who are positive are in big group settings without masks and proper social distancing. So, you know, I guess all we can do is wait, because we all have a right to our privacy when it comes to health issues that we may be dealing with, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have HIPAA laws, plus just as our profession, medical profession, we kind of take an oath to not share information unless the patient wants it to be shared. So his doctor may be being dictated to say, this is what you can say, this is what you can't say. So you can't hold that against him. I wish he would lead by example, because he's kind of undermining what we are saying and what we're trying to tell people. as we try to slow this down. And, you know, people can say we're arguing two different things, and we may be. You know, he's saying how a lot of asymptomatic people have this, which definitely is true. Our concern, and we have to understand this concern, is that stress that another wave would put on the healthcare system.
Right.
And we cannot afford that from a supply point of view, from a staffing point of view, from a whole different bunches of views. This would put quite a stress back on the health system if this were to occur.
Yeah. So explain to me the screening for coronavirus antibodies in neighborhoods program, the SCAN program. This is something that was done by Northwestern, among other places, right?
Yeah, it's a Northwestern-based study, and it's actually fascinating. When, you know, we've talked about the two kind of tests. One is the virology test. Do I have the virus right now? The other is the antibody test. Did I have the virus in the past? We know that right now about 3% of Chicago has tested positive, you know, like some like 85,000 positives in Chicago out of 2.7 million, so about 3%. What this study is doing is it took five sets of contiguous zip codes, so 10 zip codes across the city of Chicago, and they sent out 3,000 tests. And these tests that they're doing now, you don't have to come in. You just prick your finger, put a drop of blood on a card, and you mail it back in. It is much more highly sensitive and specific and much more accurate than the commercial tests that we have been developing. The amazing thing is that what we're seeing is a 20% positivity rate. In other words, one in five people in Chicago, in these areas that have been tested, were exposed to the virus, when really we only saw 3% positivity rate for those who have tested positive for actually having the virus.
Right. So the higher rate of people who came back positive, does that mean that there are more antibodies available now than we thought originally?
Yeah, it's showing us that there are more people that are immune, that more people have been exposed to it than they knew. Probably one of the most important things about this study, though, is going to be it going forward. So if you sent in the card and they said, oh, by the way, you're positive, you say, wow, I don't even remember having that. Okay, great. We're going to gain some information from you. But what's going to be more important is we're going to send you another card in a couple months. Are the antibodies still there? That's the question that we need to know. Is you can get antibodies right after an infection, but we want to know how long will they last, and will we get protection beyond a couple of months? Will we get protection at 6 months, at 8 months, at 10 months? So this study is going to look at a whole bunch of things, the impact of genetics, diet, sleep habits, occupations, everything on this. And the one thing is, you know, when you looked at the study, and I said it was five contiguous zip code areas, so that we looked at a select group. With these results now, they're opening this up, and they're looking for people to get on this study. So if you want to get in this study, it's simple. You don't have to go to a doctor's office. You go online and apply. They send you the card. You mail it back in. You get your results. So it would be great, and it would give us a better view of the entire Chicago metro area instead of just Chicago right now.
So the SCAN clinic, SCAN study rather, that Dr. Most was talking about, if you would like to participate, you simply go to scan.northwestern.edu, scan.northwestern.edu, and you know, the rest will be pretty self-explanatory. So I have a question to start off our question period, and that's about going out to dinner. You know, it's been easy to do when the weather's been nice outside. It's, you know, starting to get chilly. Went to a restaurant last night with some friends. We sat outside and froze to death, even though we were sitting right next to a heater. We were right next to a heater. So, I mean, you know, dining outside is really not going to be an option pretty soon, just about everywhere. Is it still safe to go to restaurants that are spaced apart, socially distanced, seem to be taking, you know, the proper precautions?
Yeah, this is going to be the one that's going to really test us and see. The interesting thing was we have said since the onset that this was a droplet dispensed virus. In other words, droplets cause it. And droplets go about 6 feet. And that's why we're saying all restaurants should have their tables, 6 to 8 feet apart. The problem is the CDC has now identified, as was thought by about 200 scientists in the middle of June, that this could also be aerosolized. And you say, well, what is the difference? Well, the aerosolized means that it can travel a greater distance than 6 feet when you're in a closed environment, like a restaurant. Not so much when you're outside where it can be diluted very quickly. But right now, restaurants should be looking at how often do we turn over our airflow in the rooms? What are our air turnovers? How good is our ventilation system? Because that's something that health departments are going to start to look at. If you get into a dated restaurant with closed environment and very poor circulation, I think you have a chance now that you're going to start to see more cases, which is unfortunate because it's the one time that you can socially do something and really be careful.
Yeah.
And again, it's also make sure you go in your pod. You know, the people that you know, that you trust, are doing what you want them to do for the rest of the time.
Does that also apply to essential service stores, like, grocery stores, things like that? Same kind of thing that we need to think about spreading out even a little more?
Yeah, it certainly does. And again, grocery stores, usually very high ceilings, and I'm not sure exactly how their ventilation is. But the study that came out of China that showed that, a table 22 feet away was exposed to individuals was one that tipped this for us to say, boy, we need to start looking at aerosolized and controlled closed environments and be much more careful.
Yeah. Here's Armand on WGN with Dr. Kevin Most. Hi, Armand.
Good morning. I understand when this pandemic started, Switzerland and Sweden did very little to prevent the spread of the virus. If that is in fact, how did the program work? They were going to provide as much medical care as they possibly could, accepting the fact that the more vulnerable people in the population might pass away prematurely. If that's true, how did their program work for them?
Yeah, if you look at some of those countries, they're doing okay. If you look at Sweden, Sweden took the thing saying, hey, you know what, let's just infect everybody and see if we can get some good herd immunity. Two things happened. One, they had a higher death rate, and two, they didn't get to the level of herd immunity. I think the bigger concern of what we don't know is what's going on in many of these underdeveloped and third world countries, as far as they have limited ability to decrease their social distancing. They have limited ability for masking, and those are the ones that we're going to have the most concern of, as many in their population are vulnerable. So I think we haven't even seen the impact yet in some of the African countries and actually even some of the Middle Eastern countries.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time, but it's always good to talk to you. Appreciate all the good info every week. Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital. Enjoy your day, Kev. Thank you.
You got it, Dean. Take care.
WGN, your official Guns N' Roses station. Listen to this man play guitar right here. The incredible and legendary Slash, who I had the honor of sitting and talking with one-on-one. Exclusive Chicago television interview with Slash this week. Talking and reacting to the death of Eddie Van Halen, which had only just been announced about an hour before we sat down and talked, so had a really raw and honest response to it all. Talked about Guns N' Roses and their music and the pandemic shutting down their concert tour, and of course the pinball machine, the Guns N' Roses pinball machine, manufactured out in Elk Grove Village, that was being debuted that day.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
when you were interviewing him about these pinball machines, did you feel like a pinball wizard?
I'm a pinball wizard. Dun, 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 dun.
I asked him if he was going to start playing Pinball Wizard when they start doing concerts again, if they were going to start playing Pinball Wizard. And he basically said, no.
No.
Was he wearing the hat?
He was wearing a backwards baseball cap.
Oh, so not the big top hat?
I was fully expecting him to be wearing the big top hat.
Yeah.
I almost wore
it. I thought I saw him with a picture with wearing the hat. Maybe that was later.
Yeah, not with me. He had the backwards baseball cap. He had a mask on that we had to ask him to take off because it had quite a few profanities on it that not allowed to put on television. But let me tell you this, though. When I was with him, I was so inspired. I practically feel like a member of Guns N' Roses now that I've spent time with him. And you know, I've been trying to get an idea to get me one of these music shows on WGN. Yeah, man! Sunday night! Guns N' Roses, WGN, baby!
The G stands for Guns N' Roses.
I mean, we've got the G and the N. GN Roses. WGN Roses.
There you go. There's the answer.
The shortcut for saying Guns N' Roses is GNR.
Yeah.
Could this be any more natural?
This works.
I think this works. Gold. This is gold.
Yep.
Come right out of John Williams' show, the Sunday Standard Show, and we slam into Welcome
nice
to the
work,
Jungle.
Andy. Yeah.
This is even better. I'm more excited about this than I was the big polka show that I was going to do.
Beautiful.
I'll do the polka show. You can do this Guns N' Roses. And that'll be on right after Guns N' Roses.
It's going to be
a great lead-in.
New fantastic Sunday lineup. Everyone's going to be talking about it. Not for the reasons we want, but they will be talking about it. Okay. Also,
she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. Sometimes we quarrel, but then...
All right, we got to play a little Lucy and Desi this morning. Because it's actually a sad story regarding the only great-granddaughter of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz Sr. Granddaughter is 31 years old, and she passed away yesterday, stage 4 breast cancer. Very sad story. She was Desiree Anzalone, the daughter of Desi Arnaz Jr. Okay, so you got that? Daughter of Desi Arnaz, the granddaughter of Desi Arnaz Jr., the daughter of Julia Arnaz, Desi Jr.'s daughter, and Mario Anzalone. Desiree was first diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer at age 25. Went through chemo, radiation, the full treatment, had a double mastectomy, and then the cancer went into remission for a short period of time and then returned with a vengeance, returned as stage 4 and had spread to her liver, lungs, and her bones. By all accounts, a delightful person. Her mom, Julia, said that she was a mini-me of Lucille Ball, that she was just like her great-grandmother. A very sad story. And I only bring it up because, you know, we've done so many breast cancer shows through the years here on WGN, like 20, 25 years of the three-hour town hall that we would do. And, you know, mostly we've talked about women who are a little older getting breast cancer, of getting mammograms when you're older, that this is a disease that affects older people that with, you know, certain health conditions. And here's an example of a 31-year-old woman who was diagnosed with stage 2 early, went into treatment, and it didn't work out for her. But I wanted to just bring some attention to this, that this can happen to younger women as well. That, you know, we are very much still in a battle with breast cancer. And it's not only taking, you know, the older women are still very much at risk, probably more at risk, but it does happen to everyone. So here is an example of a 31-year-old woman who lost her life. who happened to be related to, you know, was the great granddaughter of Lucy and Desi, but lost her life. So just a little bit of attention to that this morning. I certainly know how to perk up a show, don't I?
Well, that certainly was worthwhile to bring up.
I think so.
When was, does it say when she was initially diagnosed? She was only 31?
Well, it says that she was diagnosed, first diagnosed with stage 2 when she was 25 years old.
25 years old.
So that would be 6 years ago that she was first diagnosed. At age 25, she was first diagnosed with stage 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go through radiation and chemo and double mastectomy, and You think you've talked to so many survivors. I've talked to so many doctors and survivors. You think you have it. You know, I got it. I went through all the things that the doctors say I need to go through, including a double mastectomy. I remember, you know, one of our first guests on our breast cancer special was the great Linda Ellerbe. Remember Linda Ellerbe?
Yes, sure. Fantastic
journalist.
Yeah.
Network news journalist who suffered breast cancer, was diagnosed, and also had a double mastectomy. I'll never forget her sitting right across from me in our old studio saying, take these things off of me. Cut them off. I don't want them. You know, if that's going to mean that I'm done with this, I want the cancer out of my body. So, you know, people who go through, you know, that very severe treatment, you think you've got this licked. And, you know, it turns out it had spread already. And, you know, and that's why, you know, some people say, I don't want to go to the doctor. I don't want to hear the bad news. I'm afraid of what they might tell me. That's why that's why the early detection is so important. You know, there's controversy about should I get a mammogram? I'm not old enough to get a mammogram. That's why any tool that you can utilize to find out that you might have breast cancer, you need to utilize it and find out early, because that's the you know, they're making great progress when you find out early.
That's true with any type of cancer.
Absolutely.
The tests that are involved now, preemptive, as they say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about early detection. And in some cases, you know, when they can find out, like pancreatic cancer, you know, is pretty much when it's first diagnosed, even early on, it's too late. But there are some cancers that are a lot more survivable. So, you know, our condolences to the Arnaz family. How sad that a 31-year-old woman would die from this disease. But if there's anything that we can take out of it, is please go get checked. Please check with your doctor. It's breast cancer. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Please go get a mammogram. Please. I mean, that's all that we can say with that. All right. Oh, and I'm going to be talking to a Slash in about an hour. Half an hour, right? Yeah, right after 11. Because we are your new Guns N' Roses station in Chicago.
Say what you want to say and let the words fall out. Honestly, I want to see you be brave.
10:22, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Our schedule a little mixed up from when we do our regular features on Sunday morning because of NFL football that's coming up at 11:30. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time in what would be our regular theater segment this week talking about some all-star performances that are going to be taking place online. Joining us online, on the phone rather, right now, is Greg Evans, who is the Broadway editor and critic for Deadline.com. Greg, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us. Hello.
Nice to be here. I'm happy to.
So before we talk about this cool event that's going to be taking place in a series with some huge all-star names, talk to me just a little bit about the state of Broadway right now. I know they announced they pushed back openings again this week. It's breaking my heart. I know we have to do it, but you know, so sad that we're not getting live performances now for quite a few months.
Quite a few months. They moved the deadline, not the deadline. They moved the earliest Broadway will reopen now is in June. And, you know, frankly, they expect it. I think most people expect there to be yet another deadline extension for that. But yeah, it's more than heartbreaking. It's disastrous. There's no other word for it. It's costing millions of dollars, not to just Broadway and the producers, but to the city of New York, all the restaurants in the area that are closed, all the you know, cab drivers who would be taking tourists to and from their hotels to Broadway.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, it has this ripple effect that is just, it's going to be felt for a long time.
Has there been any talk of trying to do some kind of alternative seating, safe sanitizing, different ways of presenting things on stage in a live performance, like some of the movie theaters are trying to adjust, you know, with spaced out seating and sanitation? It's different when you have live performers on stage, though.
Well, it's not only different. It's again, it's next to impossible with the Broadway economics. With Broadway shows, as anyone has been there, the theaters aren't huge to begin with. The operating costs are a lot, and a Broadway show barely breaks even. I mean, makes a little profit, maybe if the house is, you know, almost full, right? So if you do the 50% seating, where you have one seat between each person, one empty seat between each paying customer, it's just not enough to keep a show going.
Yeah.
They would lose money. So it's really, that's kind of a non-starter for Broadway.
Yeah.
And, you know, some smaller theaters, regional theaters off Broadway might be able to sort of squeak by on something like that. But I just don't think there's a chance that could happen on Broadway.
Yeah, Bill, their overheads are, you know, so dramatically lower. I guess there really just is no way to do it except virtually, which has been delightful. You know, seeing, you know, people that we might not ordinarily see performing, doing benefits and things like that on the web. And now this new Spotlight on Play series is going to launch. Explain what this is.
Okay, this is a series of staged readings, essentially, and it benefits the Actors Fund, which is doing great work during the pandemic. It's been around for forever, but lately they've focused. They have a specific fund for helping with the pandemic, with entertainment people in the entertainment world who are struggling to survive. And that's not, you know, when we think of entertainment, we think of the stars, right? But we don't think about the stage managers and the costume people and you know, all those people who depend on live theater for their livelihoods. They're you know. So anyway, Spotlight on the Play.
They're all out of work too, right? Exactly.
Yeah, they're all out of work, and so Spotlight on Plays is a new series put together by a producer named Jeffrey Richards, who's been around for a long time, has done many plays that you would recognize. What they're doing is they're doing these sort of virtual readings online, one a week, beginning October 14th, and they've sort of enlisted the help of some incredible names to do this. Now, these aren't full productions. It's not like you're going to tune in and see, you know, a fully produced play.
Right.
What you will see is each of them from their own home, you know, doing these readings. Now, we don't know exactly what each one is going to look like. They're leaving that up to the director. So some of them may look a bit different than others. Some of them may look like, you know, the familiar Brady Bunch panels that we're so used to seeing now. But the names they got are, you know, incredible. I mean, you have Morgan Freeman, Matthew Broderick, John Malkovich, Lucas Hedges, which everyone knows, David Alan Greer, Ed O'Neill, Richard Thomas, Patti LuPone, and Ellen Burstyn, who I can't wait to see. I haven't seen her.
Right.
I don't think I've ever seen her do anything live. Anson Mount, Laura Linney, that everyone loves, and Felicia Rashad. This is just like a small, that's just a little you know, sampling of them.
Scratching the surface, yeah. It begins with Gore Vidal's The Best Man on October the 14th, which is right mm-hmm. around the corner, and that's the one that features Morgan Freeman and Matthew Broderick and Elizabeth Ashley. And
Elizabeth Ashley is great. I can't wait to see Elizabeth Ashley, too. Zachary Quinto is in it. Stacey Keach, Julie Halston, which if you know anything about Off-Broadway, you'll know who Julie Halston is. She's wonderful.
Yeah, John Malkovich is Chicago's very own John Malkovich, who frightens me every time that I've talked to him. I won't look him directly in the eyes because I'm afraid he'll steal my soul.
At least we'll be sort of separated through virtual, the virtual space.
Right. I'm hoping that will protect me, but they're going to do This Is Our Youth and David Mamet's mm-hmm. Race and Mamet's Boston Marriage with Patti LuPone and Anton Chekhov's Uncle Vanya. Is the mm-hmm. one that will feature Ellen
with Alan Cumming.
All right, Alan Cumming, Ellen
and
Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean the list goes on of these virtual performances, readings that will take place, but I think still pretty magnificent. If people want to get information on this, do they go to a particular website to sign up to watch this?
You go to let me get this right. So I want to make sure I get this exactly right. It's Broadway's Best Shows. I think if you Google that, you'll come up with it. It looks like it's broadwaysbestshows.com.
Yeah. They have a link. They have a link to how you can sign up for it. Yeah.
Yeah, they have it, and it's exactly as it's spelled, broadwaysbestshows.com.
All right. Well, listen, I hope we can talk again here on the show sometime. Hopefully we can talk about things that are actually going on stage. But it's
I'd love to. Yeah.
Pleasure to talk to you, Greg. I appreciate you joining us today.
I thank you for having me.
Greg Evans, Deadline Hollywood's Broadway editor and critic. Light 720 WGN. Dean Richards Sunday morning, tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. Going to be talking with Oscar winner Mark Rylance and the legendary Frank Langella. They are both starring in the new movie, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. Some of you will remember the actual event that took place out in Grant Park with the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Frank Langella is brilliant playing Judge Julius Hoffman in this movie that it premieres on Netflix this week. It's been in select theaters, but it'll debut on Netflix this week. And Mark Rylance is great playing the defense attorney, William Kunstler, in the movie. We'll talk about that tomorrow morning. We've got more of the stars of The Trial of the Chicago 7 tomorrow morning on your WGN TV Morning News, where, once a week now, Uncle Dean's behind the grill, behind the stove, working my knuckles to the bone, cooking on television, and loving every minute of it, by the way. I've got to say how much I'm enjoying these cooking segments that I'm doing every week. A huge reaction that we had to the French onion beef stew that I made a couple of weeks ago. Great reaction to the Cuban sloppy joes that I made this past week. I made Cuban sloppy joes and also this black bean and feta salad. Had chopped onions in it, chopped peppers, green onions was in it. And black beans, Cuban black beans, and feta cheese, and just a wonderful variety of different flavors. The recipe for all of my recipes, all of the videos of the segments are on WGNTV.com/DeanCooks if you want to take a look at those. But I wanted to talk a little bit about National Seafood Month, which is going on right now. The month of October is National Seafood Month, a great time to experiment a little bit with some great seafood items. I made my go-to at home is my honey mustard salmon on the grill, always a favorite, always delicious. I did see a recipe on one of the cooking shows yesterday on TV. Somebody made an Asian, like a ginger brown sugar salmon on the grill. Bobby Reichlin, I think it was, who did it. But it looked delicious. I'm going to give that a try because that's my salmon is my favorite thing on the grill. I enjoy it tremendously. I enjoy the seafood items that are featured on the menu at Carnival Restaurant that is going strong here in Chicago at 702 West Fulton Market Street. And Carlos, Chef Carlos Garza from Carnival joins us on the line right now to talk about some of that. Carlos, how are you, my friend?
How are you doing? Good morning.
Very, very nice to have you on the show this morning. How are things going? I mean, Carnival is, you know, maybe the most beautiful restaurant that we have in Chicago. The room is spectacular. It's a feast for your eyes before you actually taste anything. But how are things going there? I mean, I know the pandemic has made it challenging for everybody in the restaurant business.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure being here. And as you said, it's been a challenge for our restaurant business. But for ourselves, you know, after we reopen, we're taking precautions with front of the house, back of the house, the entire restaurant. We're just really on it. You know, the reviews from people are recognizing how hard we're working to provide a good service, great food, and also taking care of guests and taking care of our workers, our kitchen, from chefs, the line cooks, the servers, every single one. It's just, you know, playing a high role on taking care of everyone, though.
Yeah, I have to say, I was at the restaurant not long ago, since the pandemic, since you've reopened. And from the moment that you walk in, the spacing, you know, walking in, the reception area, the bar area, the seating is much more spread out than it was. You're not, you know, seated close to anybody anymore. What was really novel is that instead of bringing menus to the table, there are paper menus that come to the table, but they have that little scanning insignia on them. And you scan that with your phone, and the entire menu comes up on your phone. So you don't really you don't really need to touch anything in order to see the menu. I thought that was a really novel idea that speaks to the levels of precaution that you're taking at the restaurant. When the wait staff comes to the table, they have masks on. They ask that you wear masks when the servers are at the table, so you know everybody stays safe. I felt extremely comfortable.
That's exactly right. No, that's absolutely, you know, that's exactly what we're doing. You know, we are working hard at that side and that point. So every single person that walks in feels safe, you know, from the bar, like you said, main dining everywhere. And we're trying the best to provide, you know, just the service that everyone needs, but at the same time, taking care of our guests and taking care of our employees.
Safety first, of course. Now, you have a lot of outdoor space, which is nice when the weather's nice. It's only going to get colder as we go on.
That's exactly right.
how will the restaurant react when the weather gets chillier?
Well, you know, as you said, Carnival is one of the biggest beautiful restaurants in the city of Chicago. We have a lot of space. That's what we're doing. We got three salons. We have some private events that eventually, then we're not doing any private events. We want to turn that into our main dining as well. Uh-huh. You know, just spreading tables around. And then once we close, like you said, getting cold outside, we're just going to get more precautions of spreading more tables around. But what it helps us is that having a big restaurant, you know, we can accommodate ourselves just to have that size.
Yeah. You're lucky that you have the luxury of having all of that extra space. So National Seafood Month, you know, Carnival, for people that don't know, specializes in Latin food, a variety of different Latin foods from different countries. How does seafood play into what you're offering from your main menu?
Oh, that's a really great question, though. It's our menu, you know, is not a really huge menu, and as a matter of fact, you know, we reduced the menu a little bit just to also execute it better in the kitchen, so we won't have a really crowded line of cooks working next to each other.
Yeah.
You know, we reduced the menu on that side to kind of like shortcut a few things, so the cooks have really good social distancing, marking that,
yeah,
working on the line. So on that side, you know, that's one of the things that we kind of like did as well in our kitchen. And now, speaking about seafood, you know, in our seafood, we got a good variety. It's not a huge menu on seafood because every time we bring something to the door, is we have to really see what it is, though. We got to see where it comes from. We got to see the quality of the seafood. We just don't put seafood on the menu just because it's, you know, people like seafood. We got to bring something really, really good to make, yeah, a difference when we bring seafood to the table.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what we do.
Well, let's start off with a couple of items. I mean, I want to talk about some of the things that are on your menu, but also how people might be able to do some of these things at home as well. For example, your shrimp ceviche. I mean, you know, ceviche is delightful, and normally incorporates lots of different seafoods that are in sort of a citrus juice that essentially cooks the fish without any heat. And into it are vegetables and things like that. Yours is exclusively shrimp with the vegetables and so forth, right?
That's exactly right, yeah. Our shrimp ceviche, you know, it's just similar of a shrimp cocktail, but it's more in a Acapulco style, how people, you know, poach their shrimp with citrus. So basically with all of that, it cures the seafood at point where it gets cooked,
yeah,
because the high acidity of the citrus. And then from there, we just add more citrus to it. We add roasted tomatoes, avocado, and all the components that come with a shrimp ceviche. And then from there, you know, using right now that we got the rooftop tomatoes, we got a big rooftop where we get our tomatoes. We're adding those tomatoes to our shrimp ceviche.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
And then the spiciness that gives that ceviche, because it always goes well with something spicy and citrusy in most of the ceviches. Also, we use our hot peppers from our rooftop. You know, and then that's not only the only item on seafood. Also, we got
We'll get to the other items in a moment because I have to take a break. But I mean, it would be fairly easy for somebody to make this at home by taking. You would just take the raw shrimp and clean it.
That's exactly.
You would mix it with you can oven roast some tomatoes probably, right? And mix it with lime juice. An onion, and I don't know, do you put the avocado and cilantro with it, or do you put that on afterwards?
No, you put it afterwards. At first, you bring the shrimp, you cut it in small pieces, and then from there, you squeeze your lime juice, lemon, and orange,
yeah,
and you let it sit at room temperature, you know, for, let's say, like, close to an hour.
Okay.
Until the shrimp gets cured.
Right.
And kind of, like, slightly, like, cooked. And then from there, you use the same base just to add after that, you know, your cilantro, red onion, and then avocado, tomatoes,
and then
from there, yeah, exactly. And then you bring all the flavors together, and then just with some tortilla chips.
Yeah.
And that's something really, really flavorful.
Okay.
So you're very light.
Yeah.
And
so you're really only letting the shrimp cure in the citrus, and then you're adding all the rest afterwards, after the shrimp is.
That's exactly right.
Very easy to make, or even easier if you go to Carnival and let Carlos make it for you. Yeah. 10:53, 720 WGN. Dean Richards Sunday morning, talking with Slash from Guns N' Roses. My full interview coming up in our next half hour. Right now, though, happy to have Chef Carlos Garza with us from Carnival Restaurant, the Latin extravaganza in the Fulton Market District, 702 West Fulton Market. We're talking about National Seafood Month. And Carlos, I'm so interested. I mean, some of your seafood items on your menu, calamari, fried calamari is always a favorite. What's the key, really, to making great calamari? I mean, some people try it and it comes out rubbery. It's not as great when you go to some restaurant and it sort of melts in your mouth.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it comes with the calamari that we use is the premium wild-caught calamari. It's a really good, sometimes it's about the quality of the product, though. Mm. And the product that we use is a really great calamari. You know, like I said, it's premium wild-caught calamari. And then from there, what it helps also is to soak the calamari for 24 hours in buttermilk.
Buttermilk? Okay.
So it gives the buttermilk the tenderness on the seafood. Huh. So when you fry it, it just feels like really buttery, melting in your mouth. So it helps, you know, just to give some tenderness to the calamari. And so the buttermilk, it gives an extra touch just to make it better.
Okay. And then do you coat it in flour and fry it?
That's exactly right. Yep. After being marinated for 24 hours in buttermilk, and then from there we coat it just with flour, and we slightly fry it. We don't do it really hard deep fried.
Yeah.
We just slight fry it where it comes just crispy and perfectly tender. So, and that's what it makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know, and then the sauce that we make with it, it's just kind of like a sweet, sour, spicy, and goes on top of it. And it's just sour calamari. It's been, you know, just known as and really, really popular in a restaurant.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, when it's done right, there's nothing better. But, boy, you go some places and you say, why are they serving me rubber bands? You know, these are, this is not delicious. Your coconut shrimp is fantastic. It's such a lovely combination of flavors. With the, you know, the shrimp and the coconut and a pineapple chutney that goes with it. But maybe your piece de resistance when it comes to seafood for National Seafood Month is your paella, your seafood paella. What are the different fish that you use in your paella?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our paella is becoming really highlighted. You know, it's been getting more popular. It's been known as one of the best paellas in the city of Chicago, and not by ourselves, but by us, though.
Yeah.
It's by our guests. It experiences that everyone after having that paella.
So, what kind of seafood do you use in it, though?
We use shrimp.
Yeah.
We use Spanish octopus. We use clams, mussels.
Mm.
And that's basically what the base. And lately we've been doing adding lobster to it.
Nice.
Just in case if someone wants to have a lobster, we add lobster to it. And if not, we just serve it with a shrimp, the Spanish octopus, mussels, and clams.
That's great.
Yeah. And scallops.
Seafood, I mean, paella is fantastic. Carnival is at 702 West Fulton Market. You can learn more by going to carnivalchicago.com. Or go to their Facebook or Instagram pages. Chef Carlos Garza, very, very nice to talk to you. I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the jungle. We
got fun and games. We got 11:19, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Guns N' Roses is simply one of the greatest rock bands on the face of the earth, with a whole string of hits. And their guitar player, Slash, is simply one of the greatest guitar players in the history of the art form. Slash was in Elk Grove Village this week at Jersey Jack Pinball, a manufacturer of pinball machines. And they have designed a new Guns N' Roses pinball machine, which is phenomenal. That's why we were invited to come out to talk with Slash one-on-one on that and music and the pandemic shutting down the music world. But as I'd mentioned, ironically, it was only about an hour before that the death of Eddie Van Halen was announced.
Here's some of your thoughts and remembrances.
Well, I'm just a little shocked. I mean, it's hard for me to verbally say anything other than I'm just devastated. You know, Eddie was really cool, and I've been talking to him. We've been texting, and I knew he was sick, but I didn't want to ask him how sick he was, or, you know. But he was at the hospital in L.A. for a while, and I knew was up, but I didn't expect that today at all.
Yeah.
And so I'm floored.
What do you think the legacy of him is in rock and roll?
Eddie changed guitar playing. I picked up the guitar and. I guess it was 1979, 1980. The first Van Halen record came out, and Steven Adler, which Guns N' Roses' original drummer when we were kids, used to just hang out and did school and go to the pizza place and whatnot. And we used to listen to that first Van Halen record, and it was just insane. It was like, what the Anyway, and he changed guitar playing, but he was such a amazing musician, amazing guitar player, amazing innovator, and just a hell of a guy. And you know, we really lost a major contributor to rock and roll today.
So we also learned while we were sitting here just talking that Chicago is kind of a significant place to you, right? I guess, right?
Yeah, I got a lot of history here. Well, my grandfather was from here as well. So, but my significant other, I guess my partner in crime, and I, we met in Chicago, and the Guns N' Roses actually did pre-production here for the Use Your Illusions records. So we lived here for a little while, and I did a lot of hell raising here. It's a good town for hell raising. And she and I met here back in 89, and so we were together for a while. And then we split up for a long time, and we got back together in 2013, I guess it was. But I'm here all the time, or was up until the COVID thing started. Yeah. So this is my first time back.
And now for this amazing pinball machine. I mean, you know, my memories of pinball machines are, you know, like from back in the day of these like super basic kind of machines.
Yeah.
And this is about one of the most high-tech machines I think I've ever seen in my life.
It's insane. It is an amazing machine. I mean, this is the first time I played it completed. And it's a little bit mind-blowing, you know. We've got like 28 songs on it, I think. And it's the actual tracks off the masters, which, you know, back in the day, that wasn't possible, you know. And it's just got... basically, what we did was we wanted to recreate a Guns N' Roses show on a pinball machine. And I think we've achieved it. Or these guys have achieved it. I've just been along for the ride, but... It's awesome.
But you were pretty involved, it sounds like. Every step of the way of, you know, really helping it to be completely authentic and, like, you know, pushing the bar up a little higher.
Well, there was definitely some things that I went to Jack about, you know, to get this idea off the ground. I said, I want to recreate, you know, the Guns N' Roses Not in This Lifetime tour experience. And so that's what we sort of focused on. So when I did a Guns N' Roses machine back in the 90s, and I drew it out on a napkin, and I said the G ramp and the R ramp, and that was like the input that I had for what the thing would look like. But these guys are so amazing. I just said, let's just try and get some lighting, let's try and get all the different countries and some of the big cities in there, and the video screens that we use at the concerts, let's get that into the backlots and that kind of stuff, and all the music. And so we just went about designing, recreating basically a 3-hour show. You know? But these guys, you know, took that and went with it and made it something that was beyond my wildest dreams.
It's amazing, isn't it, really, like in these... Yeah. In this era of video games and like the most high-tech thing that you can look at on your phone, that kind of this old school form of entertainment is, you know, enjoying a comeback in a way, thanks to you guys, really.
Well, I mean, it's I think it's been sort of making a comeback way, you know, before this, but I think this is definitely a bar that we just sort of gave everybody to sort of go under.
Yeah. Were you a pinballer? Is that your interest in developing this?
I didn't actually start playing pinball until the 90s. You know, when I was in high school and stuff, I was so glued to the guitar. I never played arcade, went to arcades and did all that stuff. So at some point in the 90s, I discovered pinball, and I've been hooked on it ever since.
Yeah. Does this mean that we're going to start hearing Pinball Wizard when concerts begin again?
No, I hadn't actually planned on doing that one.
What about the concert scene for you guys? I mean, everything is shut down. It's got to be tremendously frustrating for you guys to be grounded right now.
That's exactly the word that I just used. We've been grounded since March, and we were supposed to tour March through August. So right now we're grounded until, you know, you can actually put, you know, however many thousands of people into one venue, you know, and that's going to, as far as I'm concerned, it's probably going to be a while. So we're actually slated for next summer, but we'll see if we can actually do that.
Is there talk amongst your, you know, the band, amongst management, the technical people? How are we going to, you know, what's going to be the new normal for concerts?
Not yet. I mean, right now we're just, you know, we're so not out of the woods as far as even going out to in public at this point that there's not in the foreseeable future a situation where we can go into a venue and get a bunch of people in front of the stage. It's just, so we haven't really started thinking about it. We're waiting till we get enough of a handle on the COVID situation where we can start to think that way. We're not there yet.
What have you been doing with your
recording and writing and doing other assorted odds and ends, but for the most part, just writing and recording.
So
it's been a good creative period, I can say that much.
You know what? It's weird. I've been talking with musicians and actors and, you know, movie and TV people, and it's almost like the pandemic crisis has stimulated their creative thinking into how can we do our art in a new way.
Well, I mean, for somebody like me, I'm pretty much a workaholic and a busybody and stuff, and so it's put me in a situation where I've had to be patient and sit and just create without deadlines and stuff. I'm usually working on some sort of a time schedule. I usually work pretty quickly. And I'm usually doing a lot all at once. And so this crisis has sort of forced me into a situation to be able to smell the roses and spend a lot of time on whatever I'm working on. And, you know, it's been healthy in that regard, you know.
Has there been anything that, you know, might surprise us that, you know, Slash is doing or has taken up during this time off?
I mean, hobbies?
You know. Well, yeah, like hobbies, or, you know, I'm, you know, picturing you with like crochet needles or something that wouldn't expect a rock and roller to ever do.
No, I've been busy with I've been producing horror movies, so I've been busy with that, and but mostly just writing new stuff and recording demos, and I've done some session work with different people. I just did a version of Love Story, you know, in honor of Robert Evans, who's a friend of mine that passed away last year, and so probably going to release that online. You know, so I've just been working with different people doing different stuff.
How about that? You took it Slash, working on an adaptation of the, you know, one of the most lovely love stories of all time, the movie Love Story. We're going to look forward to that. And I got to say, a super nice guy, by the way. Everybody's been asking me, what was Slash like? What was he like? Couldn't have been nicer the whole time, as you heard in our interview, which we've got the video posted of the full interview up at WGNTV.com. Oh, you know what? Actually, now that I think of it, the full video is up on YouTube. So if you search Slash WGN, be able to see the entire interview.